Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome back to the Shamrock after a few weeks off. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. Today's special guest from the AP. You listened to him on the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast, hopefully this week, because he had Notre Dame head coach Marcus Freeman on. It's an insightful interview. We'll talk about that. You guys are both out covering the ACC tournament. We can get a little bit of hoops coverage. And obviously, we need to spend at least 25 minutes on Buddy Boeheim's suspension, because that is the big story in college athletics these days. But Ralph, thanks for coming on the show. And I want to just jump right into your interview with Marcus Freeman. Matt and I, he's been on this podcast. We've spent some time around him. I don't know how much you have, but just what were your impressions in a 15, 20-minute conversation with him as Notre Dame's new head coach?
Yeah, for your listeners, I don't know if I covered any new ground, just because
when he talked about reaching out to all the former Notre Dame head coaches, okay, not just the successful ones, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, so right, yeah, and I say that only because, again, this is a guy who's gotten a lot of attention, so I always worry about, can I come up with anything he hasn't heard before? I think that my initial impression was, I've heard how confident he is. I felt like there was a certain self-awareness I know this is going to be this is going to be hard. He didn't come out and say that, but you got the impression that he understood that, this is a very hard job. I have been told I'm great, but, I understand, it's one thing to be told you're great, and one thing to actually feel like you are great. So I thought that there was, again, a little bit of humbleness there for a guy who has really shot up meteorically through the business. You also gained some insight off the air. We chatted up for maybe 15 minutes before we started recording. And, it's one of these things I almost wish I asked him on the podcast. I don't think I actually did. Sometimes I forget when you're recording and when you're not. But I think when we were wrapping up, I think I said something along the lines of, Marcus, if I had told you a year ago that you would be the Notre Dame coach and Luke Fickell will have made the playoff and he would still be at Cincinnati, isn't that a little mind blowing? And he, I was hoping he didn't take offense to that, but he laughed about it in a way, again, that showed me, I got a little sense of there's some humility here and the understanding that, yeah, this is going to be a challenge. I think I'm up for the challenge, but we're going to find out, we're all going to find out in real time.
Yeah. I guess you would have said this already, but I'm curious to what Pete said. He mentioned reaching out to even Charlie Weiss. I really wonder what that conversation was like between those two characters. And from your perspective, and frankly, for mine, I think that was the first time I had heard him, at least on the record, detail the play-by-play from his end of meeting with Jack Swarbrick, getting that call that he's getting the job that night, which we all figured had happened, but hadn't heard kind of, on the record from the horse's mouth, so to speak. What did you learn about him from from that interview, which I believe was your first with him, that you didn't really know before?
Yeah. And again, I hadn't met him, you know, last year when he came. I'll just give a little back because backstory, I think it's relevant. Last year when he came in to Notre Dame, obviously, like, Notre Dame made a very big deal out about getting Marcus Freeman. So I thought I should probably meet this guy. And obviously pandemic and this and that and the other thing, we never even got together on a Zoom. So yes, it was the first time I met him. I thought it was also really interesting that when he's detailing how, you know, like everybody else on that, like a lot of people, he was super surprised. Wait, Brian Kelly's going to LSU? Like, what am I going to do? And I think that was also interesting. And again, I think I found, you know, is he being 100% truthful? I think so. My sense was that in this position, he was, that his first thought was, what is my job going to be? Not that, oh, I'm going to be the next Notre Dame coach. So what he detailed to me is his mind did not immediately jump to, if Kelly's gone, I'm the next Notre Dame coach. His mind jumped to, if Kelly is gone, should I go with him? So I thought that was interesting for a guy who has been built up so much that he didn't immediately think that's my job. Because again, shows a little bit of humility and a little bit of the idea that, like, he is a 35-year-old coach that, you know, still hasn't had a lot of experience. So I think that there was some self-awareness there to realize that I don't have the Notre Dame job locked up. I might have to be the defensive coordinator at LSU or maybe something else.
What about, I think that his approach to recruiting will be interesting. I mean, that's a clear line of demarcation between him and Brian Kelly. What did you make of, like, his sort of elevator pitch to you about his recruiting? And then also, like, how much that can make a difference at a place that, look, they can't just get everybody into school here. There's a self-selective element to Notre Dame there too. So how much upward mobility do you think he can actually create and that part of the job?
Yeah. So I'll play a little devil's advocate here. And I felt like I've needed to play. I've played a little bit of this side since Freeman got hired, because it's super easy to be excited about this because he brings a different energy, young, handsome dude, you know, like, there's all these things that make it easy to think like, oh, it'd be fun if Marcus Freeman is a successful Notre Dame coach, not just the Notre Dame coach, but a successful Notre Dame coach. And how is this going to work out? It's an interesting story, but, you know, Notre Dame has been recruiting pretty well. And my question becomes like, well, Marcus can, you know, can take us to the next level. And I think that there probably is room at the top of that ceiling to reach. But just as you said, does Marcus Freeman now make them an Alabama, Georgia level or Ohio State level recruiting? Can his sheer personality, charisma, plus, of course, energy and sort of the willingness to be involved in recruiting at a level that, as well as they recruited under Kelly was not involved like Marcus Freeman intends to be involved. So there's room for improvement, but I would be here to say, like, you know, he's not a magician either, right? He can't get I remember hearing a great story about Kelly. One of his assistants told me, like, at some point he had to understand that you can't just say, get the best cornerback in the country.
I could guess who that assistant is.
Yeah, right, because I'm sure you've heard the story.
And I know who that cornerback is.
Yeah, right. But that doesn't change under Marcus.
Right.
Like, you can maybe reach for bigger stars and have a plan to try to get those players that involves me being more involved, but there is still going to be a limitation. And maybe that limitation is still, we're only going to be somewhere between 5 and 9 in the 10 in the recruiting rankings. We'll never really break through to 4, 3, 2, 1.
Ralph, I've always gotten the sense you maybe more than most in the media either got Brian Kelly or had a better relationship with Brian Kelly, or at least avoided hot takes about Brian Kelly. You've always kind of struck me as the voice of reason with him and his Notre Dame tenure. And I use that preface to say, like, me and Peter in the heat of the moment, we obviously were shocked in real time as everything went down. From your view, from your sources, your background, your knowledge. It was already a crazy weekend with Lincoln Riley going to USC. When everything goes down that Monday night, what's going through your mind? What's your level of shock?
Yeah, so I had been sort of finally talked off the Kelly ledge about a week or so before. And I hope you don't hear my dog playing with his toy behind me. But anyway.
He's making fun of you for buying into the same narrative we did.
There might be some growling in the back, and it's just to let you know, it's just a dog. It's not like a child or something. So, like a lot of you, I think about a week, maybe 2 weeks before, because I think I had always found myself thinking, I don't think Kelly's going to stay at just retire at Notre Dame. I could see another move here, probably to the NFL, because I'm not sure what college job is going to appeal to him. But I always felt like, you know, if there's interesting jobs open up, I got to be on my toes for possibly Kelly moving. And then again, having it explained by several different people, no, here's why he's ready to stay and own, you know, and cultivate this legacy. And then of course, bang, a week later, a week and a half later, the legacy's out the window. So I was pretty surprised, but also in the moment, you step back and you go back to what you had always been. I felt like in some ways, the way I've heard Swarbrick and some of the Notre Dame people describe it is sort of the way I felt too, which is, you know, we were always sort of prepared for this. Like we never completely felt like he was 100% in. We had never been like sort of comfortable with the idea that he was totally on board with retiring the Notre Dame coach. So that's kind of where I was with it. And like, you know, again, like shocked that it turned out to be LSU, but also again, this goes back to having known him since his Cincinnati days. And, you know, listen, he's got a big ego, right? He definitely feels like he is one of the smarter guys in the room. And I've always felt like he deserves.
Usually is, right?
Yeah, I feel like as from a football coach's standpoint, I always felt like he deserved it. Like I'm the person who's always, you know, when you put out those, like Stu and Bruce did this week, their top 25s. Yeah, I've been the one for years saying like, that guy's a top five coach. Look at the resume. He's had one losing season in 30 years. Like that means something. Like this guy can clearly coach and he's got the toughest job in the country. And he just made Notre Dame a program that pumps out 10 win seasons. Again, I think there are people who were doubtful that could ever happen again at Notre Dame, or at least skeptical that could ever happen at Notre Dame. So I've always thought him to be a tremendous coach, but I also wondered if he ever felt truly appreciated at Notre Dame. Because he was never one to, as you know, another friend of ours who I think you'll recognize when I say this phrase to you, he never kissed a shillelagh, and he was never, you know, really loved back by the fans. And I think he also looked at it and said, listen, my resume is great. I want to win a national championship. I think I got a better chance to do it at LSU. If I get that national championship, now I'm not Saban, but I am Dabo. I am at that level where people look at me as one of the all-time great coaches in college football, and I can have a better chance of getting in at LSU.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
When I would speak to Notre Dame alumni groups, they would always ask me, like, "What, you know, Brian Kelly, is he going to leave? Like, what do you think?" And I would always just sort of answer it as like, let me put it this way. Brian Kelly is never going to love Notre Dame as much as you do. That's it. You just have to live with that. Yeah. If you were a Notre Dame fan for the last 12 years, you know, in varying degrees, but you know, the fact that it ended this way, I think for us, like, am I shocked he went to LSU? Yes. Most shocked about the timing, because he really had saddled himself with, I think this team deserves to be in the playoff. I'm never going to take another college job. Like, but at this, I mean, you know this better than we do. Like, at this point, like, taking a coach at his word on anything is just like a fool's errand.
Yeah, it's a little tough. And it's also, you know, again, I try to be a little less emotional about these things. Hey, man, this is just the structure that's been created now. And it is totally unhealthy in terms of everybody involved, right? Yep. Nobody should be making $100 million decisions in the way college football programs are currently hiring their coaches, right? Brian Kelly, the thing with LSU and Brian Kelly essentially was about a five-day deal. I mean, you guys might know a little better than I as far as like the actual time, you know, when sort of there's contact and it sort of ramps up. I mean, the Lincoln Riley thing was essentially 48 hours, maybe not even that much. So, yeah, that's not a healthy way to do this thing. And so Kelly got caught up in that. And you're right. I mean, it was terrible timing. It was certainly a bad look. But I think it also speaks to the idea of like smartest guy in the room, never will love it the way you love Notre Dame. He's also, I think, not a guy who spends a lot of time worrying about, oh, this is going to make me look bad.
That is like, accurate, I would think.
Because he's done a zillion things that make him look bad. And like, it doesn't seem to bother him. And I think he just sort of, I mean, maybe it bothers him a little bit that he hears some criticism, but he just sort of brushes it off and says like, hey, listen, I'm very good at this job. I will win you over by winning a lot of games.
Ralph, I feel like we talked about this a little bit at Barclays earlier this week, but and this got me thinking with your answer to that last question. He's got a lot of that Dan Mullen, you said, smartest guy in the room, East Coast, cocky, kind of a fish out of water down in that part of the country, at least right now. And I think you had brought up the point of like he could have a Dan Mullen tenure where like he just coaches really well, he wins 10 or 11 games a couple years, but you know, it's still awkward kind of to see him down there and you don't know what's going to happen next. I mean, big picture, what do you see happening with Brian Kelly at LSU?
Yeah, so I'll pop my own podcast, AP Top 25.
We've both been on it. It's great.
And it's several weeks ago. I had Adam Rittenberg on, probably more than a month ago. And we talked about how do the high profile coaches fail? In other words, what's the route to failure for Lincoln Riley? What's the route to failure for Brent Venables? And what's the route to failure for Brian Kelly? And I don't remember exactly what we said, but it was like the conversation. Of course, it goes back to recruiting. You have to recruit the level of involvement in the way you have to recruit to be competitive in the SEC West is maniacal. You know, guys like Kirby Smart and Nick Saban, you know, listen, Kirby detailed this on as you know, burying Dan Mullen in the process last year, right? I don't know if he was trying to do that. It may have been inadvertent, and maybe Florida beat writers were just trying to get Kirby to do it. But you have to be the number one recruiter. It's the most important thing you do. And if Brian Kelly is not willing to do that, now he has the benefit at LSU of being the lone powerhouse in a state that produces a lot of players, and even LSU to a certain degree recruits itself, but to play at the level they want to play, they can't afford to lose. Oh, it's just a five-star here. It's just, oh, Alabama came in and grabbed this guy from our backyard. Oh, A&M grabbed two guys from our backyard. Like, you know, the difference between the third ranked class in the country, the fifth ranked class in the country, or the second ranked class in the country is the difference between beating Alabama and Georgia. And if he doesn't do that, that could be viewed as failure there. So I think I think to me, like, you know, the path to failure is he can't create a recruiting machine because he is not putting himself as the key cog in that machine that competes with Bama, Georgia, and these other schools that just recruit at such a ridiculously high level down there.
I mean, that was kind of one of the things, like Notre Dame doesn't have a home base of talent, certainly like Louisiana, but Notre Dame did when there were guys up here, they usually stick around it. In Louisiana, even though there's a great home base of talent, like you can get, five of the top 10 guys, but you really got to sign 9 or 10. And that's where you, Brian Kelly versus Nick Saban or Kirby Smart in recruiting, like that's not a bet I would make on Brian Kelly. When what you're selling is essentially the same as Alabama or the same as Georgia, at least at Notre Dame, what you're selling, it's easy to draw a distinction between what Notre Dame is and what Alabama is. And if you like one or the other, that's fine. But they're way more similar down there than his previous job in terms of what he was selling in recruiting.
So I thought the other thing we brought up in terms of like path to failure what does it mean to manage a roster, recruits, a program where the three and out mentality is pervasive? Pretty much every kid who you bring in at LSU is thinking, I'm in the NFL in 3 years. Now, a lot of them will be. So that roster turnover, but also that mentality of, you know, I think, listen, it's just different kids, different places, different cultures, right? I think there are more kids that maybe, you know, Kyle Hamilton being the exception, but I think even the best players at Notre Dame are not 100% walking onto campus thinking, I'm so out of here in 3 years, right? And that, because that's what you sell at Notre Dame, mm-hmm. is something of like, hey, this is a 40-year decision, right? I mean, everybody sort of says that, but Notre Dame to a certain degree it is. So I think, you know, this is what you get with, like, you guys have talked to coaches from all over the country. Again, you get different types of selling pitches and things that kids want to hear in different parts of the country. So, you know, managing that roster that is almost all three and out mentality will be, I think, super interesting for LSU and Kelly. I think that, and listen, the other part of this is three national championships in 16 years at LSU with three different coaches, and at least two of them, I would absolutely take Brian Kelly over in a heartbeat. So there, like, what's the path to success? The path to success is it's LSU, and they've proven that they can get it done mm-hmm. down there. Like, as long as you don't really screw it up, you can squeeze out a national championship down there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think a lot of the roster management part, he's such a good CEO. Like, I feel like he will figure out all those parts. It's the day-to-day recruiting when you're 60 years old and you haven't done it at that level in quite some time that I wonder just how that catches up to him down the road in year three, year four, year five. I mean, the guy wins every game he's supposed to win, which outside of Nick Saban, I don't know if you can say that about any other coach in the country down there. Other than when you play Nick Saban, you're supposed to win all of them. So I'll be curious to see how that plays out. But I mean, you mentioned the culture difference. I mean, I talked to people at Notre Dame, and, you know, there are some coaches who didn't go down there with him. And like the line I was given was, if Coach X talked to kids down here the way he talked to kids at Notre Dame, they're either going to blows or the kids are just going to tune them out and leave practice. Like, it's completely different down there.
Yeah, they receive the messages differently. And the other thing I would say about winning all the games you're supposed to win, and I know Notre Dame fans will be pissed off at this, is the games you're supposed to win at LSU are often harder.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're supposed to, now, not all the time, but there are going to be years when you're supposed to beat Ole Miss, but Ole Miss is really good and they might be better than you. Like, so even some of those games you're supposed to win within that division where you have more, there's enough talent down there that on certain years, those teams will get you.
What with Marcus Freeman, I think there's an interesting dynamic. Like, I've been covering Notre Dame for 22 years. I don't think I would ever describe Notre Dame as likable nationally. This might be the first time where I would consider it. I mean, do you think there would be a bit of a change in how Notre Dame is perceived based on the head coach, like, young, good looking guy? It's definitely a different dynamic.
I think it could last. Well, listen, I think he's not Brian Kelly, who, again, like, I'm going to stress this. I have a pretty good relationship with BK, and I don't think he is a monster, right? Like, but I understand that is the perception of him in, like, people just don't like him.
Yeah. If right? you don't like, know him, your perception of him, I think, is largely
he's inaccurate. A perfect coach for, like, this era of Twitter where, like, he's that guy everyone's just going to make fun of no matter what he does.
Listen, he's also on national TV every week and with a TV package that often has the camera directly on him all the time, right? Like, he's just like, it's just, he was put in a situation where we probably know more about him than we need to know and how he addresses or how he composes himself on the sideline. So I think that gives simply not being Brian Kelly gives Marcus Freeman's Notre Dame a little bit of a bump. I don't know if anybody is charismatic and likable enough to make up for the fact that everybody hates Notre Dame. right? Like I don't know. I'm trying to think of like who is like Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso. Like, I don't think even Ted Lasso could all of a sudden make Notre Dame the team that everybody roots for again. You know, I think they'll still be the polarizing team, but I do think there's probably a little bit of an element of they'll. I think there will be this. I think there will be at least a little empathy for Marcus Freeman coming in the door. Like, hey, you know, like, let's give this guy a chance and see how he does. And he seems like, again, seems like a cool guy, young guy. Like, let's see what happens here, as opposed to everybody just waiting to pounce on Marcus Freeman. Which also brings me up to like another, you know, interesting point of that. The way this thing has now, not just at Notre Dame, but at all major programs, you don't get any honeymoon period. And, you know, like, how quickly will the honeymoon go for Marcus Freeman? Like, you know, when they open against Ohio State, like, oh, we're going to have empathy. We're going to give him a little time. We understand. Oh, he's such a good guy. He's so charismatic. Oh, it's 45-7. Well, that takes care of that, Marcus. What the hell are you doing? Like, I think that, like, nobody's personality can overcome the idea that you just got to win quickly nowadays, and especially at a place at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, the likability factor is definitely there. The benefit of the doubt, if you will, is definitely there right now. But I'm with you, and I think, you know, Pete and I have talked about this. I know the common fan and most people in media are not going to break this down as kind of scientifically as it should be, but I really think you need to not judge him on a curve, but he's playing more top 10 teams probably in his first 3 years than Brian Kelly played in 12 years. I mean, this year alone, at Ohio State, Clemson, USC is going to be better now. BYU could be pretty darn good. I mean,
I'll tell you something. BYU is going to be very good next year.
You got to go undefeated to make the playoff at Notre Dame, at least as long as we have this 4-team system, which is sticking around for a few more years. So I'll just be curious to see the, you know, if they go 8-4 and they play close games, or 9-3 even, and they play close games against Ohio State and Clemson, what's the appetite? What's the response going to be around the Notre Dame fan base about Marcus Freeman?
Well, the interesting, I think, from my perspective is, again, and this is as much as I've been sort of a Kelly homer, right? Like, I've been the guy who, like, pounds the drum. That
you're the one, Ralph.
That's it. Like, no, this guy can actually coach. But I would say this. The last 4 or 5 years, I think I've underestimated how well the program was humming. Like, almost every year over the last couple of years, I look at it and go, well, maybe this is the year they step back and they go 9-3. And hey, listen, if you're able to go 9-3, if I think you can go 9-3, that means you're one bad break away from going 8-4, right? But they've managed, as you said, Matt, to win all the games that they're supposed to win. Even last year, pulling a few out. So I've been sort of waiting for that little recalibration step back year for a while from Notre Dame, without necessarily looking to throw Kelly overboard because of it. So I'm wondering, is now the year? I probably underestimated, again, like, how well they have been recruiting, how well the program has been, how good the foundation has been of the program to avoid having that little step back. That, again, that 9-3 year where you go, oh, okay, like, this is a little bit of a rebuild year. I've been anticipating it and it hasn't happened. So maybe it's just a matter of time. And maybe Marcus is just unfortunately walking into that.
Yeah, I think that Matt's point, like, I've written this too. It's like, I think Marcus is walking into that in the sense of, like, oh, there are going to be three top 10 teams on the schedule. Brian Kelly probably played one, you know. So if you're going 11-1 versus 9-3, but you didn't beat any top 10 teams, like, how different is that? But, like, BYU is a better example. Like, that's a game Brian Kelly would have won. I think if we reinserted Brian Kelly into the Fiesta Bowl at halftime when Notre Dame was up 28-14, Notre Dame would have won that game. He would have figured out a way to muddy up the second half, and they would have gotten out of there. So that's all fascinating to me. What about you're around more national programs. Do you think it's realistic for Notre Dame to take swings at, like, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State at all? I mean, regardless of who the coach is?
So this is holistically. You mean, like, big picture?
Yeah.
No matter who the coach is. I would say probably not. I think that Notre Dame, this is like, you know, to do it the most cliche way, like what is Notre Dame's ceiling, right? Like what is Notre Dame's ceiling? I think Notre Dame has basically been scraping its ceiling with Kelly. The one thing I would say is I would be super interested to see what even Notre Dame with basically the ceiling it's at now. I think the how do you break through that ceiling and maybe be a little more competitive with Alabama, Ohio State? I don't know. It's Notre Dame plus an amazing transcendental, you know, an amazing quarterback, right? Transcendent, he tried to say.
Yes.
It's Notre Dame with a transcendent quarterback. Like if you can get what they have had, but with like
Trevor Lawrence
type player, maybe that's the team. That's the next step that Marcus Freeman hasn't reached yet. Like, I don't know if it's a matter of adding another five-star linebacker or another, you know, two more four-star, you know, defensive backs. I think that whatever the very top of the pyramid is for Notre Dame is to get one of these quarterbacks in here. And especially in the way today's game is with it's so much more offensive than it has been in the past.
What's your off season like? You're all around the country. I mean, there isn't, it's kind of a trick question because there hasn't been much of an off season despite you being at a basketball game today with me, but where are you going? How did you manage a coaching carousel that I'm not sure we've ever seen before as far as the breadth, the overall timeline of when everything happened?
Yeah, it's you know, the carousel thing is exhausting, and you know, I'm not Bruce Feldman, right? I don't know every strength coach in the country and every recruiting coordinator, and like, listen, I think I'm fairly well sourced. I think I know enough to like be competitive in that space, but I see guys like, you know, Feldman and Thamel, and how quickly. And so the competitive nature of a journalist, you want to be able to compete and at least keep up with these guys. So then you go back to what the carousel has become. And as you said, it's the full season. If USC is firing its coach in mid-September, the entire length of a season is the carousel now and going into the off season. So it does get a little exhausting as far as that's concerned, because to be like very invested in that as a reporter, I always tell myself, like, I'm a little bit of a jack of all trades reporter. Like, I'm not necessarily great at anything, but I kind of can do everything. That's my role at the AP, to try to do a little bit of everything. Oh, there's NCAA stuff. Do that. Oh, there's NIL stuff. Do that. Oh, coaching carousel. Oh, X's and O's and teams and rankings and things along those lines. And it's fun. It's like the great part of the job is I get to do everything. And the bad part of the job is I have to do everything. you know, the carousel again, it's a little exhausting. It's also endlessly fascinating. Like, I just think, again, especially the way it's evolved, the way decisions are made. It also gets, and this is a little philosophical, it gets me thinking more and more these days about the true value of a coach. Like are these schools truly evaluating and valuating these coaches at the level they should be? You know, we see all the money gets thrown around, and I do wonder, like, how much is the coach and how much is the program and the circumstances? And do we think these guys are magicians, so we're paying them as such, when in reality, it might have more to do with what the structure is around them.
Before we let you go, you guys have a stroll over to the Barclays Center. So Notre Dame hoops. Mike Bray has been here 2 decades, all-time winningest coach. Like, for the first time in a long time, actually writing something on Notre Dame hoops for next week. But what do you make of the job that he's done in a sport that I would argue is much more difficult for Notre Dame to be competitive and win at than college football? Based on the nature, it's like, it's not three and out, it's one and out. Just like your national big picture perspective on Notre Dame hoops and the job Mike Bray has done over time.
So, you know, listen, I think he's got the best job in maybe in college sports, right? As far as the attention that's put on him and the leeway and he is given if he has a little bit of a bad year. To a certain degree, you know, I wonder if college hoops evolution over the last few, you know, 10 years or so where there are still one and dones, but there's also other outlets for the one and dones, has maybe in some ways met Bray where he is, because you have sort of like a few superpower teams who get these one and dones, and everybody else is sort of piecing it together. And in a lot of ways, it's the teams that have a little cohesiveness, can build over a couple of years, end up with a few seniors. Like, I think that's the model at Notre Dame, right? Like, you may have one star player, but hopefully you're going to get it to be a little bit of an older team, and we have stability here, so we're not going to fall off too far. That maybe that in some ways helps a guy like Bray to capitalize on stability. And hey, if we can have older teams, we can make up for the fact that, like, maybe it'll be hard for us to compete with Duke, but we can compete with the rest of the ACC, because the rest of the ACC is not really building on one and dones these days. And some of the one and dones are going overseas now, and they're going to the G League. So listen, I think he's done a remarkable job. It's insofar as the consistency of success. But I also, you know, I also find myself envying Mike Bray, because I just don't know if anybody's got a better life. I don't know if anybody in college sports can have a job with so much sort of almost anonymity, where like, hey, like, oh yeah, what are they doing? Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Great. Oh, woo-hoo, yeah. That's wonderful. And if they're not doing that well, it's like, oh, well, oh, they didn't do that well this year. By the time you realize they didn't do that well, it's too late to fire them.
He's the perfect guy. I mean, I've heard Jack Swarbrick say, like, even this years ago, like, my biggest, you know, concern isn't like who I will ever find to replace Brian Kelly, because people will be lining up at the door to take the Notre Dame football job. It's who will I find to replace Mike Bray, because the guy just gets it. He gets his place in the pecking order there. I mean, he's gone on radio shows, and I remember they beat the national title winning Duke team in 2015 to have a quick turnaround, lose at Pittsburgh. Comes back to town and everyone's still congratulating him on the Duke win, and they have no idea they played a game more recently that they lost. Like, he gets it. And, you know, I'd be the first to say I probably counted him out after last year, after that string of poor seasons, but they've got something special going this year, and we'll see how far they can take it.
So Pete, I don't know the answer to this. How many years has Mike Bray been the coach at Notre Dame?
This 22, right?
This is his 22. Yeah. He was here right before I started covering them.
Like, if you went into a bar and just started asking people, how long has Mike Bray been the coach?
Six
Notre
football
Dame?
Coaches. That's what you say.
You would get people, I don't know, maybe 10 years.
I think they'd turn to him and be like, Mike, how long have you been here? Because he'd be in the bar.
Right. Like, I mean, the simple fact that he has been there that long, and I don't think anybody really grasps the fact that he has been there that long, I think is all probably you need to know about Mike Bray.
Yeah, there are many other things that are fun facts, but that sums up, that's quintessential Mike Bray. It's like, you've been here forever, right? Yeah, okay, cool. Let's keep this going. So, yeah. All right. Well, Ralph, we've kept you long enough. We appreciate your time here on Thursday morning of the ACC tournament. You'll see Bray tonight as Notre Dame's in the quarterfinals against Virginia Tech as they head to the NCAA tournament most likely next week. So, Ralph, again, thanks for joining us. Your perspective on Marcus Freeman, and hopefully we'll catch up with you soon in person down the road here in South Bend.
Thanks, Pete and Matt.